This time on Culturefile, occasional quiet with a chance of mild to moderate silence in the second part of our series on silence and the people who crave it, depend upon it, study it, or work with silence. This time, Dr. Fiona Newell of TCD's Institute of Neuroscience talks to Gareth Stack about understanding what we talk about when we talk about hearing, as well as some defining features of the thing that we haven't yet found a better word for than silence.
So imagine your workplace. Your first Monday morning on the job, you think, how loud is that? How am I ever going to be able to get used to that? To the incessant ring of the telephone, the buzz and whir of the photocopier, or the irksome whinny of water cooler gossip. But as it turns out, the human brain is really good at tuning out exactly these kinds of distracting noises.
You know, if they're constant, then a healthy auditory system will adapt to those types of low-level, ambient, constant sounds.
Professor Fiona Newell is a psychologist who studies sensation and perception at Trinity College Dublin's Institute of Neuroscience.
Traffic noises, for example, people who live by a busy street will say, oh, I don't hear that anymore, I don't hear the sound of traffic anymore. Why does the sound of our own voice seem to annoy, frustrate, surprise people? And why do we get a universal reaction of dislike to the sound of our own voice?
The more you do radio, the more you get to like the sound of your own voice.
That's really intriguing. Generally, when I do ask students, let's say I'm giving a lecture, you know, keep your hand up if you like the sound of your own voice. Most hands shoot right down and one or two remain. And I said, do you work in the broadcasting industry? And it's inevitable that they do.
Much of her recent work has focused on how the brain processes sounds, particularly the sound of the spoken word.
So we're interested in understanding what cues do we get from a voice to knowing the mood of a person or their emotional expression, for example. So we can tell by repeating the same sentence in a different vocal expression whether that person is sad or happy. How strong is a vocal cue to emotional expression? What are the actual features in a voice that determine whether somebody is angry or happy or afraid?
Neuroscientists used to think of sight and sound as having their own regions of the brain that worked independently. Today, they instead tend to divide parts of the brain by the tasks they carry out. But if sights and sounds spring from the same brain region, then what is seeing and what is hearing? And why do they both feel so different?
That's the kind of question that George Berkeley was asking here in college 300 years ago. And that's a philosophical question. What does it mean to see and what does it mean to hear? And that reminds me of other research conducted by colleagues of mine who are looking at activation in the brain in people who are blind or deaf. And they find, for example, that regions that we consider the visual regions of the brain are active in a blind person when they're reading Braille, for example. Are they seeing? Because the system that we label vision is active during a Braille reading task in somebody who hasn't got any sight. If you think about your everyday experience, you know, we hear people talking, we, you know, see things move and we hear their sounds or we feel things that we're looking at the same time. We don't have independent experiences within each domain. Not at all. It's a coherent world despite these differences in stimulation, and the brain achieves that.
So sight and sound aren't necessarily the separate things we often imagine them to be. But what about people in whose brains the processes of seeing and hearing have become cross-wired?
Some individuals report having a secondary sensation when they see or hear something. Synesthesia is a rare condition. The most common experience is synesthetes seeing colours to letters. So they might read the letter A and they experience the colour red. But there are different types of synesthesia. Some people might hear music and see colours. There's one, for example, an artist in the UK who translates those colour shapes into visual depictions of her synesthesia by listening to Rimsky-Korsakov or something like that. And she will then paint her synesthetic experience.
So if modern neuroscience has finally begun to unravel the riddle of the senses, what does that tell us about silence.
Silence itself is very interesting because it's rare that there is such a thing as pure silence, that your ear is not being stimulated by something. Generally, what happens with the auditory system is that it adapts to continuous sound. So you're less sensitive over time to a continuous sound, which is great because you don't want to always be responding to something that's constantly present. So then that makes us wonder, is there such a thing as pure silence? If you imagine silence inside a cathedral, may sound completely different to stunned silence or silence in your car or silence in a library. They're all different types of silences. So then that makes us wonder, as scientists, how would you define silence? Is it that your auditory system is no longer responding to ambient sounds that may be present in the physical environment, but we're no longer perceiving?
But doesn't it sometimes feel like modern life is getting ever louder and more irritating?
There's individual differences in our ability to perceive sound. Each of us have different absolute thresholds. That means the minimum amount of sound that's required for us to be able to perceive that. And those thresholds change with age. So the older we get, the higher those thresholds are. So we may become sensitive to different types of sounds as we get older. For example, as a kid, we might think that some sounds are, you know, not annoying at all, like the sound of video games. As soon as we get older, we might find them incredibly annoying. So the question is then, you know, what is real silence? And I think it has to be defined in terms of how the auditory system is responding to these ambient noises. If it's adapted, no longer responding, then that must mean some type of silence. That means then silence can be gained anywhere.
The soundscape of Super Mario Brothers there, closing that report from Gareth Stack. And we'll bathe in silence once more next Friday. Meantime, don't forget you can find recent culture files on the Classic Drive page on the Lyric site and the whole thousand-strong archive at culturefilepod.tumblr.com or indeed on SoundCloud.